Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bootstrap Web. I'm Jordan. Brian, how are you?
How you doing, buddy? We're back.
Doing well. Doing well. I'm doing better than the last episode. If anyone listened to the last episode, they knew I was in a dark place.
Yes. The sun shines for another day here. It's another week. And good to be back on the mic with you.
One door closes, another opens.
That's so right, goes. Man. That is right. We're both trying to stay healthy out here, you know, no coronavirus yet.
Feel like it's gonna hit the West Coast before anything.
I know, right?
I did go on a quarantine run to Costco last night. I did.
Did you? I've been thinking we should do something. I mean, we're over here on the East Coast, but still.
Yeah. I've been talking to my wife and just kind of bringing it up like, hey, what do you think? Should we get a little preppy? And she kept saying, no, don't worry about it. And then she listened to one podcast with like an expert who was like, well, I keep a month's worth of supplies in my house. And that's what I tell all my friends to do. So, we went to Costco last night.
Yep.
Which was a good time. It was kind of, you know, I got a whole bunch of cup of noodles. I got tuna fish. You got weird shelf stable stuff. Yes.
Yeah. Cool. So what do we got today?
We're going to talk about that a little bit and how it pertains to the economy and how that pertains to our businesses and how it affects conferences. Also, Microsoft coming up, Shopify Unite, the big annual conference got canceled today. So we'll talk about that. And I also want to talk about the story in your head. Really, I'm talking about the story in my head, but everyone's got a story going on. So that's it for my side.
So, you know, I got back from a vacation last week and a couple trips before that. And I want to play a little bit of catch up on something that I worked on about 3 or 4 weeks ago, which was I did a lot of work on the positioning for Process Kit. That term gets thrown around a lot. And what I did was I turned it into really specific, actionable things that I analyzed and then things that I did. So I'll kind of walk through that real quick. Came out with some pretty good, I think, a better understanding of who I'm selling this thing to and then actually how that's impacting the product. And then the second thing will be about the product and I came to a realization this week about how I need to prioritize. We always talk about how hard it is to figure out what to work on when and in which order. And if you do this before that, like, can you do that before this or should you? Like, you know, I think I finally got some clarity on that question because there's been like 3 or 4 things that I've been eager to really get going, like marketing and growth and partnerships and product stuff and it's like some of that stuff I just can't do until I do certain other things. So I figured that out a little bit this week.
Okay.
Yeah. Why don't we dive in?
So why don't I just address it directly on the story in your head? So if anyone listened to our episode from last week, you kind of heard me go through, you know, a lot of angst. We talked about personal finances. We talked about the business stress. I want to look back a little bit and almost diagnose where I was compared to where I am now. So roughly a month ago, I received new information in the business that I can't get into all the details, but it's something that's kind of been hanging in the air for multiple years. And then all of a sudden got a lot of clarity on, but it also introduced a lot of unknowns. And so if you listen to me last week, where I'm at in that conversation is I was sorting out
Well, it was just happening. Like it happened within a few days before we recorded last week.
Yes,
so it was like super fresh.
Yeah. And I couldn't get into the details. It's just something that has to stay private for the business. It's not a personal thing. It's a business thing. So looking back, I feel like I can kind of put my finger a little bit on what happened. The way I'm putting it to myself and to others is that I had a certain version of reality that I wanted to be true. And then I got new facts that showed me that that version of reality that I really wanted to be true, it was increasingly unlikely that things would unfold according to that. And I almost had to go through like a bit of a grieving process of like, okay, that's what I want to be true is not really true. And I need to now absorb this new set of facts. So in that conversation and at that time, I had these new facts, but I hadn't figured out what this new version of reality was. Like what the story that I was telling myself in my head, it hadn't been sorted.
We'll pause real quick right there. That's one of the hardest things, like whether it's your situation, but that happens in all of our things, like all the time in different forms. I mean, the thing with building a new business, especially software, is that it takes so long to make progress. And what that means is you will be hammering away on the same path, trying to solve the same problem, trying to reach the same goal for well over a year, multiple years. And what that does, at least to me mentally, is like it's hard to break out of the – it's like, well, I've spent this much time on this. I can't just abandon that path now. Like I can't rethink it. You know, so whether you're talking about maybe this product idea doesn't have the traction that I hoped it would, or maybe the product actually needs to be and work a little bit differently than I originally envisioned, like it is difficult to break away from the original – vision, given how many months, how many years you've invested in that, you know. But I think the better entrepreneurs out there are able to like sniff that out when it's like actually time to make a hard new change that you weren't expecting.
Yeah, and I think all of us are relatively good at analyzing when those new facts come in, but it's the psychological and emotional aspect that is difficult to deal with because time just keeps moving forward. And what humans are good at is taking in new facts constantly and making assessments and judgments and just constantly, right? When you're in the jungle, you're like, I've seen this before and there might be something behind there. And I ate this plant last time. It's just this constant barrage of information and we're still doing it, but it's such an extended period of time that on day one of something and you feel a certain way and you think a certain thing, day 30, it's just you feel a completely different way. And so the way I'm trying to like figure it out is there are a set of facts. And then from there, you can tell yourself a range of different stories with the same set of facts. You can tell yourself a pessimistic story, a neutral story, an optimistic story, an absurd story, like all these different – this rainbow of options. And I had a lot of trouble going to people inside the company and going to mentors or investors because I didn't have it right in my head yet. And so when I did come across someone, and it happened a few conversations, I would just regurgitate all this crazy information and assumptions and fears and good and all this, and they were very confused by what the hell I was talking about. And it almost took me a few weeks to sort out the story in my head. And I lean optimistic, so it is an optimistic story, but I had to square it with reality. And so it took me a few weeks to kind of figure out an optimistic story that was also true. And once I had that right in my head, then I can give off that optimistic story, but in an authentic way. I'm not just saying, hey, everything's amazing, and I really don't feel that way, but to employees, to investors, to mentors, to everyone outside the company and to myself, it took me a few weeks to kind of come up with that optimistic version of the story that was also true and based in reality and based on this new set of facts. So if you listened last week, I'm kind of floating. I don't know what ground I'm standing on because all this stuff is so new. And now I feel so much better, and I'm happy. I'm making progress. I'm staying up late, and I'm all excited about what to do because I have like this new version. Okay, this is what reality is going to look like, you know, for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, that is kind of cool. When like, even though this big change was sort of unexpected, after you think through it and you start to develop a plan of like what to do about it. That's where the excitement gets. It almost brings you back to that first month of starting a business. You know, it's like, oh, it's yes. Like a renewed yes. Energy.
Yeah, I kind of feel that surprising. A little
bit right now with the process kit.
Wait, okay, so I want to get into that. So, right, it's like your people with our DNA are at their least happy when they like don't know what to work on. They don't know what to do. They don't know what to do next.
That's the thing. That's a big source of stress for me is when when it's like three or four competing problems to solve. I don't know which one to solve first. And And that's, yeah, it's a big source of stress for sure.
Yeah. We've talked about this years ago where at some point I like stopped listening to podcasts and reading blog posts because there was so much advice that I didn't know what to do next. And it was like exhausting and made me unhappy. And I shrinking the option set of like, I'm going to work on a webinar or I'm going to do X was such a relief because then you're just doing work and that makes you happy.
With podcasts, I've been like that for a while now, like at least a year or two, where I'm really only tuning into podcasts like ours, like our friends' podcasts, like really just to...
It's almost like a story unfolding.
Well, that's really the only thing I'm sort of interested in now is listening to stories of other people, whether I personally know them or I don't. I'm not tuning in to learn new tactics. I'm not reading blog posts about new like maybe I'm missing out on some stuff, but like
I'm sure we are.
I've got too much to work on. I can't learn anything right now, you know.
Yeah. I'm sure people listening to this are relating to it in their own version, right? How optimistic you are, all this stuff is like sometimes you come across people that blow your mind with the story that they're telling themselves. You know, this is one of the things I've talked about before about is Israeli entrepreneurs. That they're so absurdly optimistic, but very often they just make it come true because they just believe it so much. It's almost like Adam Newman at WeWork, right? He's an Israeli kibbutznik like I am. And my man from day one, when Ben Fisher, my co-founder in Cardhook, worked at the first WeWork, Adam Newman in that first location was talking about all the same stuff, taking over the world, changing the culture. He was the same way from the beginning. So it's not a surprise that it didn't just happen by mistake.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I mean, talking about like the story thing, I mean, I used to have a hard time listening to my own podcast. And for the first, I don't know, 50, 100 episodes, I didn't like ever listen to it. And now I listen to Bootstrapped Web like all the time.
What does that do?
I just find it helpful. It actually helps me make sense of where my head was at. That story that you're talking about. Like it's
where was I when I was recording this?
Yeah. And I mean,
you can almost recognize where your head was at by the things you're saying and how you're saying them.
Yeah. But also like just the act of getting on the mic and talking about it, because you have to at least try to make some sense when you're explaining it verbally. Like, you know, you could start to make sense of things to write it down. People use journals for that kind of stuff or like internal blog posts. But publishing stuff, whether you're publishing a blog post, but I think it's even better talking about it on a podcast. It makes you make sense of these thoughts. You have to make a point. You have to argue a case one way or another, and you have to support it with logic, right? Because when that stuff is just swirling around in my head and it's unformed, you know, like you were talking about like, you know, last week, 2 weeks ago, when it's all fresh, you don't really know how to make sense of these things. It's because you haven't really tried to verbalize or put it out there in a way that's supposed to make sense. And so I think listening back to conversations like this one really helps to sort of like, yeah, that was me trying to verbalize it. And now it's me listening back and now I can even keep myself accountable. Like, all right, well, what you were saying there really doesn't even make any sense. So, you know, it kind of plays into like going, you know, being in mastermind groups or going to conferences, like the Big Snow Tiny Comp trips I do and stuff like that. It's like, it all helps to try to make sense of what you're working on because you have to present it to somebody and they have to push back on you, you know?
Yeah. And it's a snapshot in time.
Yeah.
It's not the fully baked, fully formed, everything is done. I now fully understand this. Here's a bow on it and I present it to you.
Yep.
Okay. So now how does this relate to where you're at and the story? A lot of positioning is telling a story. And right, this is the stuff you've been thinking about and prioritizing. So what's going on your side?
So let's see, which one should I talk about first? There's positioning or there's prioritizing. I'll do the positioning first because this happened about a month ago now. I went to two Big Snow Tiny Comps, and the first one in Vermont, I gave my talk and I got a lot of good feedback, but I came away from that trip feeling like, you know what? I actually didn't really like the way that my talk went, my session went with the group. And that was mainly because of me, because my takeaway when I was driving home from that trip was like, you know what? I don't know for sure what's going on in my own business. I've got my metrics and stuff, but like I was making some assumptions about who the target customers are and how the customers are actually using Process Kit and all these different things. But what I found was like a lot of that was based on my gut feel. You know, I do a lot of calls with customers, you know, several a week. But up until that point, I didn't really sit down to analyze them. It was always like, whoever the last three people that I spoke to, whatever they were talking about is like all of a sudden, oh my God, that's a huge trend in the business. When really it's just one passionate customer talking about something.
Right.
You know,
understandable.
You know, so it's really just like a mishmash of like emails and calls and little things that I notice. And but so after that trip and before the second one, before I went to Colorado, I spent that week in between to do a deep dive to just get to the bottom, give me some hard data points that I could point to, like that is proof that whatever I'm saying, or it's going to disprove some assumptions that I had before, because both happened. So what I did was I have a few hundred survey responses from people who, like everybody who starts a trial, they fill out a 4-question survey. And many people further back filled out a longer survey. So every single person who started a trial, I have some data points that I ask them, like, what would make ProcessKit a win for you? Like, what's their main goal? What are some other solutions that you're using? How many people are on your team? And how did you hear about ProcessKit? So I had that data, which is like a few hundred people trialing. And I looked at that for the last like 3 months. So like the most recent people. Also at this point, I have real customers, like paying customers. And it's more than just, it's not a lot, but it's like, it's more than just like, you know, I can count them on several hands. It's not one hand of just a few people, right? So what that means is like now I have real data and real usage to go look at. Whereas before, in terms of like how I came up with the copy or the direction for the marketing site, you know, some of the early assumptions on what to focus on in terms of how to present the product and everything. All of that was based on gut feel and early conversations. But now I can fast forward through the last few months and actually point to real data. So what I did during that week was first I went through the paying customers. I opened up each of their accounts and I looked at exactly how are they using ProcessKit? Like what are they using it for? You could tell just by looking at the projects that they're putting through there. And then also on those paying customers, I went back to the surveys that they had filled out before they started trialing. And I could see, oh, okay. So I basically took all these data points, put them into a spreadsheet, tried to normalize the data. Like we've got this many with this team size, this many with this team size, this many are using it for this, this many are using it for that. And then I did the same for a few hundred trialers. They didn't convert to paying customers, but they did fill out the survey data. And so I went through and I like normalized all those answers, put them into a spreadsheet. Anyway, the key takeaways from all that data analysis was, number one, I found that 80% of all users are in some form of a client services business. So we're talking about like agencies, consultancies, productized services. 20% are not exactly that. So there, in the 20%, there's a lot of SaaS companies, like membership communities, something else sort of like random, right? But even among that 20%, the customers, they're using ProcessKit for their like concierge onboarding, the more handholdy kind of stuff, even if they're like a customer business.
Right. Even if it's Carthook and it's SaaS, we would be using it for our interactions with onboarding, let's say.
Yeah, exactly. Or like employee onboarding and things like that. Mm-hmm. The big takeaway on that point is it's for client services. You know, 80% plus is a large enough majority to make me feel like I could double down on saying this is a product for client services companies.
Right. Does that match with your original expectation?
Yeah, I think so. I think
one of the things I like about analysis this way is figuring out, oh, I was wrong about this and I was wrong about this, and just getting used to being wrong as like, that's totally fine.
Yeah, there's one thing coming up that I was a little bit wrong about. I'll get into that. ProcessKit was born out of my business, Audience Ops. That's a client services company. My audience is largely client services, so it sort of makes sense, but I didn't make it that specific on the marketing site until now. And then the next thing is, okay, so I know it's for client services, but now what about industry? Like, Should I even niche down even further to say, oh, this is for client services who are doing web design services or accounting services, right?
The narrower, the more effective.
Yeah, right. But what the data showed is that 40% of all users are in some form of marketing services, and that's a variety of SEO services, design services, branding, you know, pay-per-click management, stuff like that. 60% are in a wide variety of other industries. Like people who, some of them are paying customers of Audience Ops. Like, and by the way, while we were sitting here, I just got a new Process Kit customer. Sorry, I meant Process Kit, not Audience Ops. Got the text message for, you know, another conversion. So,
yeah, hell yeah.
I love them. 40% are in marketing services. 60% are, I mean, I've been seeing architectural firms, accounting firms, mortgage brokerages.
So pretty wide range.
Some like e-commerce, a few, and then there's like SaaS who are in like a variety of different industries, you know. So it's just kind of all over the place, and some are big, some are small. I'll get a little bit into the team size thing in a second, but so that, like, haven't seen that 40-60 and seeing such a wide variety. I mean, yesterday I spoke to somebody from like Ohio State University who's doing some internal stuff. Like, people are need processes and repeatable projects for all sorts of different use cases. So I don't think I should necessarily niche down, like, from the homepage, like, this is for this industry and no one else. You know, I might do some like campaigns aimed at accountants and campaigns aimed at marketing people and whatever, but like the main product can be a little bit, I think in terms of industry, it can be a little bit more broad. But then it got into actual use cases. Like, what are you actually using ProcessKit for? This is one thing I was a little bit wrong about. I sort of had the assumption that everybody was using it for customer onboarding. And that since that was such an overwhelming use case, that maybe I should really niche down the product to be like, this is a customer onboarding solution kind of thing.
Yeah, that would be much more narrow.
I was sort of half wrong about this. What I found was that something like 90% of people do use it for customer onboarding, and that's like their one of their first go-to use cases for it. But like 60% plus are using it for two or more use cases. So they're using it for customer onboarding and they're using it for repeatable monthly service deliverables for their clients or monthly reports or onboarding employees or a sales process or,
okay. So
or that's blog a good, content. Like,
that's a good sign that if there's a entry point and then it becomes more useful in other contexts.
Yeah, yeah. And then the last point that I have here is sort of about team size. So the vast majority of users are in the, I don't have it in front of me, but I think it was 3 to 5 or 6 people on their team. And then there's a bunch who are in like the 6 to 10, 12 people. And then a few who are in like 20 plus people teams. And then only a couple who are like solo users. So it's very much.
Okay. That's good too.
Yeah, because it's a paid tool. There's no free option, mm-hmm. And I think that sort of cuts out the solo users. They'll just go use like Trello or something. I sort of talked about this before, and I think it's still very, very true. The more I talk to people, it's people who are gearing up to grow their team. Like, they're already at 4 people, 5 people, and it's a mix of contractors and full time people. But something is happening. Like, they're growing a lot, or they're taking on a huge partner now. And so they're expecting to hire 5 or 6, 10 more people over the next few months. And that seems to be like the,
want to get ready.
Yeah. That's the trigger point that makes them start to seek out a tool to get themselves organized because they're not organized enough yet. So it's like, they have this, like, they're like aspirational to like get more organized, more systemized, more automated. Everybody wants to hook into their Zapier Zaps and automate everything and make it really scalable. But if they're at 20 plus people, they've probably already figured a lot of that out. And so I would love to get those larger companies. And I do speak to some larger companies, but it's usually like a small department within a larger company. So that's the thing is the most of the people that I'm speaking to are like about to grow a team. They intend to scale up their client services. So I got all these data points, put them into a spreadsheet. I ended up making it like a presentation that I showed to the guys in Colorado. After that trip, I came home and I updated I updated the marketing site. So that now the homepage headline is different from what it was before. Before it's pretty broad. It was turn how into done. And Liana Patch helped me, you know, rewrite a lot of the copy in that first version. She came up with that headline, which I thought was really great. You know, given
it is good.
Well, given what I had given her very early on in the process, that was months ago when it was based on my gut feel. Now I changed it to, what did I change it to?
Sit back and watch your service scale.
Yeah. So, you know, that's sort of like intended to speak to services. The subheadline calls out client services a little bit more. And then, you know, everybody intends to start to scale up. Like, again, like they're looking to start that scaling process.
Interesting. What I don't see on here that I feel like based on the conversation we're having should be on here is the word onboarding. I see client intake, but I don't see like employee onboarding, but it depends on what you're finding.
That's that second section below. And that this also changed. This used to be something completely, I used to be a section talking about like, it's about processes plus projects. Now I'm calling out the three common use cases. I called it client intakes. That could be client onboarding. I'm undecided on what to call that because we will have like intake forms and stuff built into the thing.
Well, see what people are calling it when they're filling out your forms.
Yeah. Like that's the weird thing about the customer onboarding use case is that everybody's using it for that, but they're not – when they fill out the survey, they don't say, I'm about to sign up because I want to get my customer onboarding in order.
Oh, tricky.
It's like they don't know to call it that, or they don't think about that until they're already inside Process Kit. And it's like, well, what's the thing that we do? Oh, we're setting up new clients every month with our service, you know.
And it's more that setting up new clients than it is setting up new employees.
Yeah, there's some doing employee onboarding, but for Process Kit, it's more about onboarding clients.
Okay, because the employee side of it gave me all the growth hacky ideas of, you know, talking to Gusto and integrating with them. And you know, we get – anytime we've raised money, you have to file a Form D that says this company raised money. And as soon as you file a Form D, you get inundated with services, right? So it's people who are looking, hey, they just raised money. That means they're going to hire people. You could talk to them about, hey, scaling up your hiring.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely will be looking for signals like that, like companies that are about to scale up hiring for sure. Because that's usually an indicator both their hiring and their business is scaling and they need to manage their
workload. That's right. That's interesting to be able to look out at job postings and that type of volume on how many people they're hiring. Like there are a few agencies in town in Portland here, and they are literally always hiring. At all times, and like, okay, clearly you're growing, you're doing well. You need more help.
Yeah, and the other thing that I speak to people, it's pretty clear that a big driver for them is that they are the manager or they're the owner, and so they need visibility into their team, and they want to make the people that they're managing, the people that they're hiring, more efficient, more automated. They want to reduce the number of things that get escalated to them, like. And so I started to rewrite a lot of the copy on the homepage. So now like a headline further down says like your team and clients will thank you. So I'm calling out like this is for clients and this is for your team, you know, and it's little things like that throughout the homepage to try to make it a little bit more aimed at client services and people who are growing their team. And then in terms of the product, just yesterday, I shipped a new feature called clients. I mean, now you can literally manage your list of clients in Process Kit and associate projects with clients, assign people to clients, give clients custom attributes, stuff like that. And that in my conversations, it's like, well, you know, Trello and Asana and you know, all these like Airtable and stuff like they're not necessarily built for client services. And I'm always like figuring out like, well, should I make a card a client or should I make a project a client? Like, I don't know. I get those sorts of questions all the time. So now it's like in Process Kit, you make a client and you assign projects to them. And that's it. That was sort of like the positioning work. I've got a lot more product work to do and I'll talk a little bit more about that. But,
Now, the positioning worked. Did that help out in your prioritization? Right? They kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah, it did help. I already had a pretty clear idea on which product features need to be built next. because I've talked to so many customers, and also over the last 2 to 3 months, I've been forcing demos. Like, you come to the website and you can't start a trial unless you book a call on Calendly. And so I had just a lot more calls, and through those calls, it's like same exact requests come up again and again, and the same things. I'm like, yep, we're building it. It's coming soon. It's coming soon. It's coming soon. You know, and some people are converting, you know, but you know, so like some people, the product is enough for them now, but there's still just repeated requests, and there's frankly not enough conversion. Like, trial to paid is not high enough yet. So, you know, definitely have some more work to do there.
Cool, man. Well, it's good to hear that. First of all, that you actually listen to this. I'll tell my wife that maybe she should try to give a listen.
Oh, yeah, that's my wife does not. No way.
but that's cool that you're kind of getting value from going backwards and kind of looking at that. Did you look to April Dunford's book? I have that book. That book has been sitting on my desk for a long time, and I leaf through it, but I haven't sat down and fully digested.
That is a really good book. I read it a few months ago. For me, the big takeaway from that is when it comes to positioning, customers have these categories that are already well-defined in their mind, you know? So trying to invent a new category is just so difficult, you know, because even if you're trying to do that, they're going to put you into a category one way or another.
Yeah, that was the thing that I took from it that I didn't like, but I had to agree with, because I don't want to look at competitors and base everything off them. And she was like, that's cool and all, but if you don't, your customers are going to do that anyway.
Yeah. And then you don't really have control over how they view that.
That's right.
And I'm still kind of, I don't know that I've fully solved the way that I, you know, categorize or message around what is ProcessKit, but the way that I'm doing it right now is it's process-driven project management software. And, you know,
are you worried about being compared to other project management software, or that's just how people are going to think about it anyway?
Not really, because everybody that I'm speaking to is switching from a project management software.
Oh, so they're doing this in Trello, Asana, Teamwork, something.
They're duct taping three different tools together.
Oh, interesting.
And they're looking at.
I wonder if you're going to have to be integrated into that eventually.
Well, sort of, but like, so like we have a Zapier integration, and they do integrate using Zapier, but a lot of people are. In my audience, the people who I'm positioned for, the client services people, there's a lot of people who are frustrated with things like Asana or Trello because it's too broad-based and it's not specific for client services, and they're really not great for repeatable process-driven work. You know, like even you look at Basecamp, I love everything about the company Basecamp and their design and their philosophy, all that kind of stuff. But if you look at how it's built, it's designed for like software companies who are building new things every month, and every mm-hmm. project is different. The shape up process, it's like,
right. You need to communicate around it. And
yeah, you got to figure out what you're going to build this month, and then you're going to build that, and it's completely different. Most client services companies are churning out the same websites for clients week in, week out. Most marketing services companies, they're churning out blog posts. They're doing SEO services. It's all repeatable. And
right. There's creativity, but the process is the same.
It's so much more about the process, you know. And if you're going to scale that up, then you have to get real about the process. And so that's where I think – that's where people start to feel the friction. And so then you see people like pay for a Basecamp plus paying for Zapier plus paying for Airtable plus paying for like some other place where they store their SOPs, and they're off in a silo somewhere – and then their team doesn't follow them. And like the whole idea with ProcessKit is that it brings your processes not only in the same place, but it actually uses your processes to drive the project, automatically adapts the project based on what type of client it is, like stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, I love hearing like these new things open up. You know, like you start out somewhere. For us, every year into the business, like, would be like this little hill we climbed, and then we would be able to see a lot more in front of us. Then you climb a little bit higher up, you're like, oh wow, there's this whole thing in front of us we didn't even realize was there. And then you go another year, and then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, there's this completely new area that we didn't even realize. And it's like the deeper you go in, that's why it's, I've talked before about, like, you know, my approach at this company was like, yo, let's make some money quick kind of thing. And then you start doing it and you're like, no, that's not it. This is much more interesting than that. And there's people involved in it. And the opportunity doesn't really start to open up until you get into this phase that you're in right now, where it's like, it's repeatable project management. That's a huge category. It's much bigger than, you know, than, hey, let's identify one specific process that you can do it over and over. That's much broader.
And as the year goes on, I do want to get more specific in terms of like campaigns that I do or webinars that I do or templates that I offer. Like, you know, I've already started offering some templates for like blog content and podcasting and like more specific use cases. But just one real quick thing about integrations. It's sort of interesting how, to me, like how big Zapier has become.
It's crazy.
It's crazy and it's great. Honestly, I think it's great because it's like almost every customer that I talk to, especially the ones who've converted to paying customers, they were already Zapier paying customers. And I'm like this too. When I look for software now, it's like if they don't have a Zapier integration, I basically can't use them because I'm using Zapier. I don't intend to not use Zapier, you know? And that's definitely how this market is. Like they are totally hooked into Zapier. So they need to integrate stuff using that. And I don't get any requests for direct integrations. Like
it's cool to see them in that context.
Like everybody is using things like Airtable and like spreadsheets or CRM software, HubSpot and stuff like that. Nobody is saying like, can it integrate with HubSpot? Can it integrate with Slack? Can it integrate with it? Like, I don't get those requests.
Zapier specifically.
They're only like, does it have Zapier? Like, how do I get that going? Okay, cool.
It's such an admission that software gets built in a silo, but gets used in like a web environment. Web like a spider web. Like everyone has multiple systems. Some companies benefit from that. You know, we went to HubSpot because we were sick of that web. There is an enormous amount of frustration in the Shopify ecosystem because the downside of that app marketplace is that people use 10, 20 different apps inside their store, and getting them all to work together can be difficult. So Shopify did an amazing thing in building out a great API and letting apps fill in all these holes throughout the platform for specific functionality. But next thing you know, you're running a store with 20 different services.
Right. Right.
Yep. Makes it complicated.
Yeah. What else you got?
I'm not that worried about getting the flu. What I am worried about is the flu being the trigger for more pessimistic consumer sentiment. And then the economy starts to slow a little bit. And then the narrative changes on that front. And I'm worried that this crazy run that the economy's been on can get derailed from this virus, even though, yeah, it's definitely scary to actually get sick, or someone in your family, your friend, or whatever, to just the general population, people getting sick. But I think the more likely lasting negative impact is economic, and that directly impacts all of our businesses and e-commerce and supply chains and reliance on China. And I'm a little worried. I'm a little worried on that front. I'm worried about Shopify's stability and their stock price.
As we're sitting here today, like today it's February 28th, and you know, I still feel like it's a little bit too early to say everything's, you know, falling apart. But I do think that like just in the last couple of days, the news cycles have gotten like crazy. Like day after day, it's like it was like 5 cases and then 80 cases and like 700 cases. Like what? Like,
and the stock market is getting nervous, right? Yeah. That huge point drops.
Yeah, day after day.
Yeah, now. The outbreak in Italy is in the region that borders Slovenia. So we have two employees that were going to go to Slovenia next week, and they're no longer going. One of them is pregnant, and it doesn't make sense. And it's, and again, it's not not necessarily the worry of being sick, but yes, if you're pregnant, then you have a lot of worries about getting sick specifically. But it's just a lot of unknowns and a lot of travel restrictions. Shopify Unite, it was announced this morning that it got canceled. Facebook's developer conference got canceled. MicroConf better not be canceled.
I know. I was just thinking about that today. That's not far away.
I'm assuming, you know, a smaller gathering like that is less of a problem. And also MicroConf doesn't have lawyers breathing down their neck, whereas Facebook and Shopify being publicly traded companies, you could see how the lawyers are just saying, that's just too much risk for us to take. So I'm concerned, and I am taking that all the way back to Cardhook, to the company and financial position and access to capital and all that stuff. So I am doing what I think is the prudent thing, and I am laying out all of my financing options on the table and making sure I understand what it looks like. What does it look like if we don't raise any more money ever? What does it look like if we don't raise any more money and the economy doesn't go well? What line of credit can I get from the bank? What line of credit can I get from, you know, from a SaaS like revenue lender? What would it look like for strategic investors? What would it look like for institutional round? I'm just kind of looking at all of it and trying to understand what the options are and, you know, if we should move in any of those directions.
I mean, so the financing piece aside, what about like the revenue what does it look like if e-commerce is seriously hit in this way? Like,
yeah, yeah, it's right. They're obviously directly connected, and we have solid revenue right now, but not solid profit because we're still pushing. And so that makes me think about that equation. I've also thought about, okay, let's say the economy goes bad. How can we turn our pricing and our pitch into a no-brainer in that environment, right? How do we go from charging a premium to charging a percentage of increase so that it's a no-brainer, right? Like all this stuff, I can't help but think that we should be thinking about it.
I don't feel as immediately apprehensive about either of my businesses. I could see being in e-commerce, it feels a little bit more connected to that supply chain and everything. For years, I've thought about like what would an economic downturn really look like for my business? I don't know, because the last time, you know, the big one back in 2008 was I had just gone freelance that year. And in a weird way, it actually helped me as a freelancer because companies were hiring freelancers. They weren't hiring employees, or they were laying off employees and hiring freelancers. Now my business is just structured very differently, so I don't know how that would exactly impact people, you know, spending on blog content services or buying tools like Process Kit. The only thing that I think about is that maybe optimistically is that, like, I mean, my team is all remote. The service is remote to clients. Remote in general is sort of, it's like one of the few things that's sort of getting a little bit of a bump from this coronavirus. Like you see,
that's
like
right.
Zoom is going up and stuff like that.
Yes. Yes. And we've talked about it internally in the office on, okay, what happens if, you know, if this thing hits? And, you know, I saw Patrick McKenzie talk about his kid's school being closed, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, it could get a little weird. It does really help to be able to just go remote.
You know, I think this is the kind of thing that, like, not to be super like crazy paranoid or anything, but it's the kind of thing that can move a lot faster than people expect. It's like, I don't really know what to expect at this point. But.
Yeah, I feel you, but I think it does make sense to be on the lookout as a business owner, you know, maybe a touch more conservative until we know more. Yeah, but I'm doing all that stuff, you know. I'm going to Bank of America, I'm going to Chase, and just saying, you know, if I want money, what does that look like? Just lines of credit. I mean, that's what lines of credit are for. Yep. But I don't like it because it feels so much like the time is right to be more aggressive and to push. And right, we're just about to go to BigCommerce, to these other platforms, and it's like I don't want to have this defensive mentality. Right, part of that story in my head was like, okay, here's all this stuff. How do I make that come out to be optimistic and aggressive?
I mean, the flip side of it is that, like, at the end of the day, we could just keep focusing on our, like, you know, you can't let stuff like this completely derail your focus or your drive, or, you know, we still have to show up to our businesses. And it's like, you know, I get hung up on, you know, I'm a junkie for politics and getting hung up on that shit all the time. But like, yes. but I don't feel like it takes me away from like doing the work. It's not like I'm, you know, checking that stuff in the middle of the day.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Some people on our team, on the other hand, are full blown, not panic, but, you know, stocking up on antibiotics. I think Slovenia got a little freaked out because it's right next door. They treat things differently over there. The towns in Italy, they're closed. You can't go in and out of the town. So I think they're kind of a little more freaked than we are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I got one more thing.
Talk to me. What do you got?
So a couple days ago, I was sort of like looking over my notes, my thoughts on all the things that I want to do, these competing priorities. My talks at the Big Snow trips, where a lot of it was about, like, you know, this year, this is 2020. I need to really grow this thing and turn it into a real business process kit. It's still building, but last year was about building the product. This year is grow it so that it's a legit business now. And I'm anxious to get going on marketing, anxious to do whatever direct sale outreach, partnerships, you know, whatever needs to happen on that front. And I started thinking through a whole overhaul of my onboarding process to how to get customers to jump through the hoops that I need them to jump through to convert to paying customers. I do have a whole plan on that front, but the conclusion that I came to this week was, I can't really do any of that until I get these three or four big features built and shipped. And so the decision that I made was, number one priority is build these features, the ones that keep coming up again and again on the calls that I've been having. And these are big differentiator features. These are features that dig in deeper to that positioning of, like, this is for client services. I started to realize that I was having too many repeated conversations where I'm like, yep, that feature's in the works, when in reality it's not in the works. I haven't had enough time to get it into the works yet.
It's in your head, and you get to decide what's in the works, therefore it's in the works.
Yeah. But I was having calls every day, or I was on trips every day or every week, and these things were not in the works. You know, they were just in the plans that I decided we will build it and it'll happen, but sometime soon. I don't know when. And so now I sort of came to the decision, like, look, let me just double down on building these. It's like three or four pretty big features. The first one I shipped this week, which was clients, like three more. And I need to kind of push the other stuff back. I'm looking at MicroConf as like that, the line in the sand, where I feel like between now and MicroConf, it's about 2 months to go hard on product. And I've got the Indian developer that I talked about. He's been great. So he's helping me move even faster through stuff. The reason why I think this is sort of significant, at least in my mind, is that I have this fear of building too much, and the fear of going into the cave and not talking to customers and just building product. Cause we see that happen with people in our community where they spend a year or more just coding and they're not actually selling. And so I've always sort of had the opposite, maybe to a fault, I think, where it's like, I don't feel justified in spending my time coding unless I'm spending an equal amount of time talking to customers. And so that's why I went to forced demos over the last few months. You know, that's why I forced myself to think about marketing plans and onboarding plans and stuff like that. Cause I feel like if I'm not doing that, then I'm going to fall into that same trap that other developers fall into, where they're not thinking about marketing. But lately I feel like it has slowed down my feature roadmap. Like these are big features that will differentiate from competitors, that will get people to convert more, that are just not shipped. And it's not because I'm building them slowly. It's because I have three or four calls in a day, and that breaks up my focus. You know,
you're going to pay the price somewhere. It's not free.
Yeah.
Wherever you pay your attention.
Yeah. So what I did was I went back to self sign up 2 days ago. So now it's no longer forced demos. This is sort of temporary. I plan to go back to a forced demo onboarding process later on. But between now and MicroConf, it's going to be anybody can come to the site. They can sign up for a trial. I've got some very basic onboarding automated stuff that they'll see. I'm here. If they do want to hop on a call with me, I'll still do some of those by request. But now I have my days pretty much open. Also, since Audience Ops, the sales calls are handled by Sarah on my team now, which has been going well. So now I've got time to like really just hammer out these are like more power features that really add a lot of capabilities to Process Kit and make it pretty compelling, I think. So if I can get to like, you know, end of April into May, having built three of these big features, then I'll feel like I'm in that position where it's like, okay, time to structure the onboarding process around this stuff. Time to go hard on marketing now that we have a much more complete solution, you know.
Tick tock, tick tock. Back and forth. That's the deal.
That is. And it's like, you know, it's still the fear of like, I don't want to like spend too much more time without, it's not like I'm cutting off growth of customers. I'm still selling to customers today. I actually think that this will accelerate it, because if I can get these big features built in 2 months rather than like spread them out throughout the rest of the year, it'll just let me really go hard and then like the second half of the year on marketing and growth, you know, having this stuff built. So that's how I'm thinking about it mentally now. I feel better just having that priority. Like I know that like my number one priority is build these features, and then I've got that stuff, took notes on all these marketing plans and stuff. I'll get to that in May, you know?
Okay. So that's good to have that clarity. I have no such clarity for us. It feels like it's one of those moments where everything's important and we are looking for a marketing agency to help us on that side of things. And we are looking for a technical support engineer, and we might need to go remote because we really need someone very specific, and we need to hire a designer. And it feels like everything's important, which is makes it tough. All right, man. Well, let's call it. My dog is staring at me. He's like, yo, I could pee on the floor. If that's what you want me to do, I'll do it. I got no problem.
Are you telling me to pee on the floor? Cool, man.
All right. Good catching up. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Later.